Okay. Morning, everybody. Yes, how are you? Let's continue with color in it. Interaction design with the first module where we discuss human color vision, perception. We have seen or we discussed that there is a certain amount of light necessary to be able to detect colors, to get a kind of a color appearance. So today's subject is about lighting and light quality. So what kind of light source is necessary to be able to consider a rather precise color reproduction? Before we dig into the lecture, I would like to remind you about signing up for the next week lab sessions. I've been sending out a couple of reminders because I see that there are approximately 45 minus the lecture, about 43 students signed up in Blackboard. But so far, I was counting 37 students have signed up for the lab session. So I don't know whether some of these students do not have to do the coursework or what are the other reasons why they are registered but not signing up for the lab session. So tomorrow I will send the list. I'm talking about this list here to the exam office. And then I expect by then all students have signed up who are interested or are required to take the two coursework. So I see now that we have nine groups with four students. Excellent. Then there is Inger in session three, who's still on her own. But I will send out another reminder to today. Perhaps there are some remaining students appearing later today or tomorrow morning. Otherwise, is Inger around? Is Inger here? No? Okay, otherwise I will get in touch with her and perhaps she could join one of the other groups. So we will see tomorrow who else is missing and signing up. Otherwise, are there any questions from the room about the lab session and the procedure? And okay, so then I will also adjust then the timing, not the dates, the timing only, because it seems that this session one, the C, nobody has signed up. So then I will just move up this session Monday from 3 to 4 o'clock up to 2 o'clock. So there is no point for us just to wait down in the lab and then there is no group appearing. So I will do that tomorrow and then I will send out a final update via email so that you have the final date and the time slot for your group. Yes?
On session two, there
is it? 12 to 1, 1 to 2. What is weird or?
They are the same time.
That's Tuesday and Thursday.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay,
no, but good, you know, these are these tiny things that can kind of make some noise or confusion. Okay, no, I think it looks good. Also the other ones, Friday, yeah. So if you're able to fill up in session three, the first group, and then, of course, we will add another time to the group number 12. So currently there is no time slot, but then we will just extend from 2 to 3 o'clock for the last group, assuming that we have filled up the first group. But, I mean, it's just about 1 hour changing, so I think that should be fine. You have another lecture after 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the lecture starts at 2:15 then. Is that the... Okay. Yes, I make a decision tomorrow when I see whether Inger gets some group mates or we move Inger to another group. Then it's just kind of to move up the groups or cancel group number 9. Then I will double check with your other courses. Okay. Then coming back to lectures, maybe I've noticed I just uploaded the lecture notes for today's lecture so that you have the notes available and can add your personal notes directly to these slides. Then I would like to remind the textbook. We still stick to chapter 2 for today's lecture. Sorry, we are here. 25th of January. Still chapter 2, that's correct. Then I added some additional literature. So one important topic of today is what is called metamerism. And I found a Norwegian article about metamerism, which I think is... excellent additional literature for you guys, although it is in Norwegian. So for our international students, it is perhaps challenging to read. But there are more English-related information or publication related to metamerism than Norwegian. So I highly recommend for you to go through this Norwegian article. It's also kind of a recap about human color vision and then about the lighting, which is very essential to kind of experience what metamerism is about. Then I added another link to what is called the Lighting Handbook, which is a kind of general information about different type of light sources, the functioning and the quality. Okay, if there are no further questions, then we can start. As mentioned, the lecture today is related to light sources and light quality, with the focus of color science and color vision. Light quality is in the context of how light can affect the appearance of color. So the agenda of today's lecture is as follows. We start with some basic parameters to get a kind of a basic understanding of certain terms used in lighting. Then we'll have a look at what spectral power distribution is about, also related to light quality and detect colors. Then related to light quality and to quantify light quality, we will have a look on what is called color rendering index. We'll also talk about color temperature, how color temperature is expressed. And then related to light and light sources, as I just mentioned, is the visual phenomenon of metamerism. Okay, we'll start with some important terms used in the context of lighting. So basically, we can distinguish between what is called luminous flux. We can distinguish between luminous intensity, what is called illuminance, and luminance. I'm aware of that these four terms give rise for confusions because the name might be quite similar. But let's have a look now in these four individual parameters. So we start with luminous flux, and the abbreviation is in Greek phi, and the unit is LS or lumen. So luminous flux basically describes the amount of light emitted by a light source in all direction, as indicated in that illustration. So it is the light amount emitted in all direction. So the light from a typical old 60 watt incandescent lamp, as an incandescent lamp, or a glödelampe, is equivalent to approximately 700 lumen. And the lumen is the most important replacement for the watt value. So I assume you are familiar with these type of bulbs. So in simple terms, lumen is a measure of the total amount of light or from a light source. So the higher the lumen, the number, as brighter the lamp or the light appears. So when comparing the efficiency of the different bulbs, two parameters are of interest. So how much light the bulb can produce and how much energy is needed or is used. So we know what measures the power of the light bulb needed, so how much energy it uses. And in an incandescent lamp, also in a glødelampe, about 10% of the energy used turns into light. And then we know the remaining almost 90% is producing heat. And these are also the typical parameters attached to these light bulbs. As just mentioned, the how much watt is used to run this 915 lumen. Then the dimming, so this particular lamp is made for dimming purposes. Kind of the time, how often the lamp can switched on and switched off, kind of the socket standard. But for us, most important is the color temperature, and as it says here, RA, what is the color rendering index. In this particular incandescent lamp, which is equal to 200. So we will get back to that later today. So the next parameter is luminous intensity. The abbreviation is I. The unit used is candela, with the abbreviation or the unit CD. So luminous intensity describes the amount of light in a certain direction, as indicated in this image or illustration. So luminous intensity is defined the light in a certain direction. And this is a useful measurement for directional light elements such as reflectors. So it is represented by the luminous intensity distribution curve, which is a curve to visualize the representation of the light and the illumination. Then, number three is the illuminance. The abbreviation is E, and the unit is lux, or LX. So illuminance indicates how much luminous flux, also the amount of light, hits a certain area of a surface and is measured with a lux meter. So if I want to measure how much is the illuminance on the desk, then I read that in lux. So then I know how much light is falling on the table. There are specific standards that specify specific illuminance for different applications. So there are standards defining the lighting of office lighting or indoor workplaces. For instance, in this standard 12464, it is defined that 500 lux is required for a typical office lighting. And finally, the parameter luminance, where we have the abbreviation of L, which stands for luminance, and the unit is also candela, but per area, also candela per square meter. So luminance, or brightness, is the only light parameter perceived by the eye, as you can see in the drawing. So that is the illumination. Then we have the lux, if we measure the surface of the desk, and if we measure how much light is falling into the sensor, which is indicated by these blue lines, then we talk about luminance or brightness. So luminance basically is related to how much light hits the retina from the object. So it describes on the one hand a light source impression of brightness, so how bright it is, and on the other hand a surface, and therefore depends to a large extent on the degree of the reflection property of a surface. So the term luminance has typically been introduced as a measure of how light a surface becomes. So if we sum up the previous four slides, or the four parameters, then if we talk about the light in all directions, then we talk about the luminous flux, or lumen, the light in all directions. If we talk about the light in a certain direction, then we talk about luminous intensity, or candela. If we want to know how much light appears on a surface, on a certain area, indicated here, then we talk about illuminance measured in lux. So typically a photographer is measuring the scene before he's taking an image, and then he's measuring the lux, and then he's relating the lux measurement to the aperture, to the CCD intensity, to the exposure time. And then finally, when it comes to the exposure of the light to the retina, then we talk about brightness or luminance. So this is just another schematic visualization of the two most important parameters. So the light source, then we have the book, how much light is falling on an illustration, or on these paper sheets, then measured in lux, whereas then if you want to know how much light enters the retina, or is reflected from the illustration or the book, then we talk about brightness, or we talk about luminance. To sum up in a kind of different way, so luminous flux, unit is lumen, the total effect output of a light source, candela, in which direction the light is going, then lux, light density falling up on the surface, street illumination typically. And when it comes to the luminance and the candela per square meters, then we talk about the brightness extended source to surface. And very typically, we talk about luminance or brightness for our display. So typically, displays nowadays, we talk about 120, 160, 200 candela per square meter. So if you would measure the the light intensity with a spectrophotometer or a light meter or a colorimeter or an radiometer, then probably you would get the readings in condyle per square meters. If we talk about high dynamic range display, which has become quite famous nowadays, then we talk about up to 1,500, 2,000 lux condyle per square meters, so which is very, very intense. But if you have such a high intensity, then also the dynamic range, also from no light to the highest brightness, is much bigger compared to the dynamic range you have on your displays. And of course, again, the contrast then of your displays is related to the viewing conditions. So if I switch off the light in here, then the contrast on your display is increasing significant compared to as it is now, with this kind of light in the room. I added this slide with the idea or with focus on the image, which is a typical setup for a graphic designer. So a graphic designer who is doing rather critical color work, also image processing or color processing, and then he or she might have these type of setup. So there is not much light in the room otherwise. Then we have the display, also producing emission light. And then there might be a light box where we have a physical sample, a print or an image. And then one of the tasks is actually to get a match between a printed sample or a paint and the corresponding image on the display. And there are certain procedures which are defined in these two ISO standards up here. So ISO 3664, viewing conditions, which is a kind of rather important standard for a graphic designer communicating color. And a standard for the display and color proofing. So with all the parameters of setting up a display. So I assume later in the course at Mystad, Ivan will talk about the importance of the calibration parameters, calibrating a display. So then we talk about the primary colors, also what kind of RGB primaries we choose. Also typically sRGB, probably you hear about term sRGB or Adobe RGB or Digital Cinema Initiative, also DCI P3, which has become more and more popular and probably will replace sRGB standard. Then another parameter is the light intensity, also the brightness or candela per square meters. Number three is what is the appearance of the white light. So this light is a kind of rather neutral, but we know candlelight or incandescent lamp has a kind of a warmer appearance. So we can use calibration where the screen is appearing warmer or colder. So that is also a choice or a parameter in the calibration. And the number four would be typically what is called a tone reproduction curve or gamma. So all the information between no light on the monitor and the maximum light, also between black and white. So there are multiple tones to reproduce. So, and we can have lighter middle tones, or we can have darker middle tones. So in the same way as you do some image processing, where you have an image which you might consider is too dark, then with a gradation curve, you can lighten the image. Or if you have the opposite, an image which is too light, so then you can darken it. And then you manipulate the pixel values, not in the black and not in the white, but all the values in between. And that is what is basically called the gamma or tone reproduction curve. And these are important parameters to give a match between the image on the display and the image in this viewing cabinet where you have the light on top. So that you can simulate on the screen how the final image will look like. And then typically, and that's actually the point, so if you talk about the monitor and the calibration and the brightness, then we talk about candela per square meters. And if we talk about this viewing cabinet, then we talk about lux. And then due to the fact that these are two different parameters with two different units, then you need to bring these two numbers in sync. And we won't go into the equation details, but a rule of thumb is basically if you have 400 lux and you divide 400 lux by P, so 3.14789, then you end up with approximately 127 candela per square meters. That is not the most important point. The point is to distinguish between candela per square meters on a monitor and the lux in a viewing cabinet, okay? For a typically graphic designer setup. Viewing conditions, so these are typical levels of illuminance and luminance. Again, we talk just about display for critical color judgment, about 160 candela per square meters. We talked about office lighting, 400 to 500 lux. Viewing booth for critical color judgment. So if you have the viewing cabinet only and no monitor, or typically if you want to choose a certain color at Buchmacher or Monterre. So you wanna paint your living room, and you're looking for a certain wall painting. Then perhaps you have noticed so that the area in these shops where you can buy paint and where you have these small samples, then these samples are in a shelf with certain illumination, and there you should have, or the shop should have, 2,000 lux at this area to kind of make the right choices. And that is just a kind of a standard. So Newton, which is a very well-known paint supplier, they are, of course, very interested that all their booth or stands are calibrated and that they look the same, whether it is in Gjøvik or in Oslo or where else. And then it should be 2,000 lux illuminance. Any questions so far? Okay. Then we know light can be produced in many different ways, naturally and artificially. Light is produced cost effectively using four main groups of light sources. So we have these thermal light sources, where we typically have incandescent lamp, also glödelampe, then also a very well known halogen incandescent lamp. So I think they incandescent lamp has already disappeared from the in the shops, and I think the next which will disappear is the halogen lighting. Then another family are these typically discharge illuminants with low intensity and high intensity lighting. So basically these light bulbs are filled with a certain type of gas, and then adding electrical power on the anode. And then these molecules, these gas molecules, get attached to the glass surface, and the glass surface has a certain type of coating, which then transforms the non-visible molecule into visible light. That is the basic or the principles of these gas, these charge lamps. And then, of course, nowadays, this light emitting diode, which has become kind of the standard nowadays. So I think in this building, except these are the only remaining halogen lamps. So these lamps are LED. Then we do have some tubes, fluorescent tubes in the lamps downstairs. So there are, if I just give a remark to the LED, there are two ways producing white light with LED technology. So I just mentioned a light emitting diode is a semiconductor diode that emits light during the supply of electrical current. So the point here is normally, and that we will also see next week in the lab demonstration. So these type of LEDs are consisting of three diodes, and typically red, green, and blue. And superimposing red, green, and blue produces a white light. And that is basically what is happening on your display. So this is what we call the additive color mixing. So we add energy, or we add different certain light, so red light and blue light and green light. We add them up together, and then it produces kind of a whitish light. So here we are using typically three diodes. But then the question is, okay, I can produce white light using these three diodes. So what about if I know red and green? What is red and green producing on your display?
Yellow,
exactly. So why not using then a yellow diode? Also reducing three diodes to two. That is what is actually quite common nowadays. So then having, instead of red and green, only yellow, because it is produced by red and green, and then we have the blue. And these two, yellow and blue, also produces white. And it's much more cost efficient. Before the break, let's talk about spectral power distribution. So a spectral power distribution in color science, it describes the power per unit area, per unit wavelength of an illumination, also what is called radiant excitance. So a spectral power distribution is a graph of intensity of each wavelength in the visible spectrum. You might remember from the last lecture Isaac Newton's prism attempt, where he had a tiny hole in the room where daylight is entering. And then he used a kind of a glass particle, or I don't know whether he already was able to obtain a prism. But the principle was you have a white light, and you get the white light through a glass prism, and then typically you end up with what is called a rainbow, with the dispersion of the colors, long, medium wave, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and short wavelengths, violet. And using that principle, then the next step would be to measure the energy. So how much energy do we have in the blue, in the violet, in the blue, green, yellow, and orange. And that is what we end up with, what is called spectral power distribution. So if you have this incandescent lamp and we measure across the visible spectrum from the 380 to 780 nanometer, then we measure relative little energy in the blue area, but we measure much more energy in the red area, which gives a kind of a warm light impression, a kind of a reddish light from an incandescent lamp. So spectral power distribution is the measurement of the power at each nanometer across the visible spectrum. So on the left-hand side, we can see the relative spectral power distribution of light from an idealized northern sky. So that looks rather different compared to the incandescent lamp, because we have much more energy in the blue region compared to the red or yellow and red region. So what kind of spectral power distribution, also from which light source, could this be? This is a kind of spiky spectral power distribution. It says already. It's a typical fluorescent. The next question would be, what is the reason, or what are these spikes representing? It is the typical or the type of gas used in these light tubes. So there are different type of gas used in these tubes, and if we measure the white light with a spectrophotometer or a spectroradiometer, then we end up with this type of fingerprint. And the fingerprint then tells us what kind of gas the tube contains. Now, when it comes to color reproduction, which of the two light sources would be better to use? Any ideas? Yes, please. Okay. I did not expect. Your answer, but it could be. I show you later on a profile with a more simple spike profile. I agree. So there are some little energy also in between the spikes. Yeah, you have the spikes. Probably some of your displays might have a kind of a similar profile. But my point is that natural daylight has a kind of an excellent color rendering index, some sort of speaking, because you have a lot of energy across the visible light. Yes, you had a question? No, as I said, so these spikes are indicating the type of gas. So that is just a type of coincidence right now. So if I show you later a kind of a mercury lamp before the break. So this is a typical, the spectral lines of a mercury lamp. Then you have only these three bands. And even worse, if you have a low-pressure sodium lamp, which we still have in Gjøvik, in some areas as the street light, then you have only a tiny energy line in the yellow part. Yes, just give me one more minute, then we can just finish up the spectral power distribution. So next week, among the demonstration, we will have a look at the Newton attempt using an halogen lighting. And then I'm using a prism, and then we can produce a very nice continuous spectrum. Then we can also test, for example, your mobile camera to see whether your mobile camera is able to detect all the tiny kind of differences between the different color shades. So it will be interesting to see how far or how good the nowadays technology has become compared to 5 or 10 years back, where it was a kind of rather poor, ending up just with three lines with an RGB line, even though visually you can see many more distinct color shades. So we talk about continuous spectrum. So continuous means that we have a kind of a continuous spectral power distribution, typically from a candlelight or an incandescent lamp. So a candlelight would be rather similar. But probably it would be a kind of like that. So less energy in the yellow, green, blue part, but then a lot of energy in the near infrared and the infrared part. Compared to a line spectrum, typically from gas discharge lamps. So that was that image here. And then, as I said, when it comes to street light, so I took an image of this color checker, so this kind of physical color test target. And under the street light, under these type of illumination without flash, I'm ending up with these type of color reproduction. So a kind of rather poor color rendering using this very poor color rendering index. Then, of course, using the camera flashlight, I'm ending up with a much better or almost identical image as the physical test target. Okay, let's have a break. So let's regather at 15:15. Is that sufficient? Okay, 15:15, we continue.
Men I gruppene du snakket om, jeg har ikke meldt meg på der ennå. Men okay. Det nok til å lage da en ny gruppe med noe som snakker om? Eller, eller går vi på en ny... Det kan,
Nei, så det beste hadde vært det. Jeg lurer bare å fylle opp.
Men blir det bare to på den gruppa da?
Ja, det det jeg ikke vet. Altså, hvis jeg teller hvor mange studenter som I Blackboard, minus underviser, da det 43. Så vet jeg en bare som kom til, da det 42. Og nå jo det 36, 37. Så det fortsatt 3-4. Ja, ok, du en av de, men så mangler jeg fortsatt 3-4, men jeg vet jo ikke hvorfor har de registrert seg, eller har de allerede gjort det I fjor?
Men hvis vi bare blir to, skal vi fordele oss da på grupper som allerede eksisterer?
Nei, altså hvis det to, hvis dere hva skal jeg si, hvis det greit for dere, så det greit for meg at det to søkker. Altså, vi vet ikke, det ikke nødvendigvis slik at jo flere du jo bedre blir det.
Nei, det jo sant.
Men altså, hvis det greit for deg og for Inger, så det greit å kjøre dere på. Så jeg har tenkt å sende noe eller om ettermiddagen ut enda en påminnelse.
Ja, men da bare går jeg inn der og så skriver navnet
der. Ja, da går du inn der så skriver du bare navnet der.
Ja.
Og så får jeg se om det plutselig flere som dukker opp. Jeg tviler litt på. Jeg har sendt så mange turinger. Ja. Så jeg har ikke hørt noe.
Mm.
Så, men bare skriv deg inn der, og så får vi se hvordan det blir.
Ja.
Ja, ok. You're from Ukraine, isn't it?
Yes.
You're doing good? Is it... when did you come to Jørvik? A long time ago or half a year ago?
I live in Ringirike community.
It's when?
It's near by Helikos.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Have you signed up?
No.
Just, okay. Have you signed up or you're still looking?
Yes, I didn't sign up because we agreed with Anne Christine that I can reach her in about a week.
Okay.
And I don't know, tomorrow is the deadline.
So who is on
Anne Christine, she's from Germany.
She's not. That's Anne Christine, isn't it?
Yes.
Is that the?
But can
the student from Germany?
Yeah. She's
okay, but I don't see her today.
Oh, yes. She's and not. I can't reach her. So I just other book.
Yeah,
I
just wanted to propose that.
So, for instance, Inger,
she's not here today, but I just talked with this other student up there. So I recommended her to sign up here. So if you could have a talk with her,
then you could also sign up
there, and then you are three in the group, so that's okay. You don't have to be four. I mean, if you are three, then
and
that is sufficient.
It's only one session, yes?
Yes.
This third.
Yeah.
It is not instead of lecture, it's just additional.
It's just a kind of demonstration of what we talked about in the lab. You know, kind of, as I said, to show this rainbow colors made from white light, and it's a demonstration, but it might help you to kind of to get a better understanding about what color vision is about. And then that's perhaps a half an hour, and then the other half an hour from this 1 hour is related to color vision test, also physical test, which we can conduct. So we have multiple tests.
It tests will be in the end of the course.
So
yes?
if you come at 11 o'clock, and then we just divide your four or three into two groups, and then one group goes to a student assistant for half an hour looking at these color vision tests, and then the other students come to me or to the students, and then we go through this demonstration, and then we swap.
Okay.
So then, and that is an hour then.
Thank you. I got it. And you said that you text some messages. I don't know, maybe you don't text to me, but I don't receive any announcement, or is it not so? Is it not so necessary? I don't know.
But
system.
Are you registered? So are you in this list? Can you see your name? So now, just have a look, or. But you have not received any email at all?
No.
But are you using this mail address?
Yes,
so because
to log in for Feda, yeah?
Right.
Yes, and I don't receive. I just see these courses
So I just send you now a mail, just a kind of a test. So let's see. So I just sent that now to you. Because if I send the information to the students, then I'm doing that from Blackboard.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But that requires that, of course, all the students have signed up, are registered. So yes. If you're not there, then you won't receive the...
Og så jeg så at plass til gruppe 7, det var ledig, så jeg lurte på om vi kunne satt oss der, kanskje, at vi kunne møte på det punktet, hvis det noen andre tar. Her, ikke sant, torsdag 2. februar,
ja.
Fra 12, jeg skal bare sjekke om vi har ikke kunnet.
Ja.
Torsdag 2. februar,
Have you received the email?
I'm just checking. To the blackboard, yes. I need to receive
another. No, you should just receive that email via your email account or.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you would on forward a post hvis jeg sender mot eller med en til ny.
Hvis du sender ting på Blackboard, så får jeg det på Blackboard, så får jeg en mail av du lavet noe, men jeg får ikke det alltid. Så det litt rart med de mailene, det bare tull med det for meg.
But do you receive the email via Blackboard? No? The one I sent to you?
Do you get a notification? Because I'm getting like those do not reply that you posted something on Blackboard.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't get a direct mail.
Okay, so then that is the way I receive it. So I receive... where is that? Because when I send an email via Blackboard, then also I receive the mail I wrote on in my normal account.
Yeah, sometimes so. I receive something like this.
Yeah.
But other times I receive something like that's XVL, but something like this. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But can we talk? About that 12 o'clock
okay.
Because then the students do not have to wait so we continue 12 o'clock
yes.
After the lecture
okay.
It's okay?
Yes, thank you very much
okay, you're welcome
ja,
ja. Vi gjør det Okay. Okay. Great. Okay. Yes, let's continue. I don't remember your name. We just talked together about the group. Yeah. Kan vi prates klokke 12 fort med en gruppe og Okay, great. Okay, so let's continue. So we started to talk about, or last week we talked about the human color vision. We talked about the retina. We talked about the photoreceptors, the cones and the rods. And then in the first lecture, we talked about different type of lighting. We talked about spectral power distribution. And now the third element, assuming we have an object which is reflecting or transmitting light. So the next two or three slides are dedicated to the object which receives the light and which is transferring the light further, perhaps in a camera sensor or into our eyes. So basically, we can talk about four different scenarios, having different type of objects or materials. So starting again with a light source, then we might have an object where the light is transmitted through the object, because it is a kind of a transparent object. Makes sense. Transmission. Then we might have an object, a material that are translucent, which allows light through, but with a significant diffusion or distortion. So some of the light is transmitting the object. Part of the light is absorbed. Part of the light gets into a different direction in the object and is bouncing back. Do you have any idea of a particular liquid? I have to say a liquid which has a translucent property. Water, to me, it's more there, perhaps. Can be, yeah. Milk is known as a kind of a liquid, which we can talk about translucent. Or also typically measuring skin. That has also translucent properties. So part of the light is reflecting, part of the light is entering the skin layer, then the light is moving under the skin and it might leave the body again. So milk and typically skins, they have translucent properties. Then objects which absorb light. We know walls or these type of objects, they absorb all the light, and then the light or the energy gets transformed into another energy, typically heat. And then, of course, reflection. So when the light, all the light energy gets absorbed, then obviously there is no reflection, like a typically black body radiator. So when we talk about color temperature, then we will talk about the black body radiator. Or another more practical example is wearing a black T-shirt. So then we feel that in summertime, it gets warmer because the black is then absorbing the energy and it gets transformed into the energy of heating. And then this desk or the wall typically has reflection properties where the incoming light is bouncing back. Yeah, then we might talk about, for instance, print. It's perhaps not that relevant for you guys, where we have pigment particles. So we have ink on a substrate, on a cardboard, or on a paper. Then we might have light, which is just bouncing back from the surface, also from the coating, from the first layer on the paper. And then we might have light which is then entering and it's scattered. Or we can have, as in the sea, some of the wavelengths will be absorbed and some will be bounced back by the ink pigments. But my main point is we can measure the object properties using these typical spectrophotometer. And then we measure what is called reflectance. So the reflectance is the ratio between reflected light divided by the incident light is equal to reflectance. So if I measure the reflectance of the desk, then I have a spectrophotometer illuminating the surface. Some of the light gets absorbed, some of the light gets bounced back into the measurement device, and then I obtain what is called reflectance. And reflectance is always illuminant independent. And there are objects who have a very static reflectance. So the reflectance of that desk or that material won't change a lot over time. So probably next week or in summer, the properties will remain the same. But as I mentioned earlier, the reflectance of food, for instance, of meat, that will change over time. So together with the light and the reflectance, then we call these for radiance. So radiance typically is hitting the retina. So radiance is the combination of the reflectance multiplied with the light. And therefore, if we use candlelight in that room, then the candlelight has a certain properties. The reflectance is the same, whether it is candlelight or it is this light or there is no light at all. Okay. Then the question is, why is it so important, or what is the use of knowing the reflectance properties and knowing the spectral power distribution of the light source, and also knowing how we can match colors? So the reason is, it is just a kind of a tool to measure colors and to end up with a certain number which is corresponding to a certain color. So using a spectrophotometer, we can measure a certain material, and then we get a kind of a number, an objective number corresponding to a certain appearance. So an alternative would be to describe a color or an appearance in a subjective way. But of course, if I would ask you or you or you or all you, then we would have 30 different kind of descriptions, because we have in a way different appearances. We have different cones interpreting the signals in a different way. So basically, what is happening in a light meter or in a spectrophotometer, it has a certain light source. The light source is known. Then the reflectance of the object, so light source times the reflectance of the object times what is called a color matching function, which is a kind of a model demonstrating the way we perceive color. And then we might end up with what is called a tristimulus value. So probably tristimulus value XYZ is not common to you, but perhaps you heard about something called LAB, L-A-B. It's also a kind of a method defining a color. Besides, later we will dig more into RGB and the kind of more ergonomic methods to specify colors based on lightness, based on hue, so what kind of specific hue, and saturation. So how saturated a certain color is. So is it less saturated or is it highly saturated? And then there is a way of describing a color more mathematically, and then we ending up with XYZ, the tristimulus values, and LAB. Okay, color temperature. color of light is determined by its energy distribution at the different wavelengths in the visible spectrum. So when describing the color properties of a light source, the concept of color temperature is used. So when we describe what is the looking or the appearance of this white light, or outdoor, or a candlelight, then we talk about color temperature. So color temperature is basically the range of colors correlated to the temperature of what is called a theoretical object, also known as the black body radiator. So the black body reflects no lights and emits energy in shorter wavelengths as it is being heated. So color temperature is not measured in Celsius degrees, but it is measured in what is called Kelvin. So Kelvin is the unit to express the color temperature. And so 0 Kelvin is equivalent to -273 degrees Celsius. So I assume you can detect what this is about, kind of a horse shoe. So to forge an iron or steel, the material needs to be heated to fortune temperature. So at different temperature of the material, the color appears different. And the color of the heated black body is corresponding to the Kelvin. The concept of the black body radiator related to color temperature is looking at these four pots. So as mentioned, the color temperature is based on the relationship between the temperature of a theoretical standardized material called a black body radiator and the energy distribution of its emitted light measured then in Kelvin. So although this radiator does not exist, many metals behave very similar to a black body. I always try to come up with these old type stoves, not this induction stove, but these stoves which were around at maybe 80s, 90s, 2000, where the iron plate gets heated. So if you boil some water, these iron plates, they still look black. But then perhaps one of you have experience forgetting to switch off the stove, and then coming back after 15 minutes, and then this black iron plate suddenly has turned into red. It's still enough time to switch off. But if this red-looking iron plate then is turning into a kind of whitish, then you should leave the house, otherwise it might start to burn. So this stove iron plate is a kind of similar to this black body radiator, where this iron gets heated up, and as more energy it is applied, it is changing the color appearance. So that is basically what is illustrated here with this metal or this iron pots. So this reddish, or indicating a kind of a reddish color, then is corresponding to approximately 900 Kelvin. And then it gets to a kind of yellowish 1800 Kelvin, then a kind of more whitish, 3200 Kelvin, and then it gets towards bluish, and then the number is rising up to 5,000-6,000 Kelvin. So if we relate that just to another image, so if we start with candle light, so if we measure the color temperature of candlelight, and we measure approximately 2,000 Kelvin, and it looks rather warm, rather reddish. And then flashlight or tungsten light, 2,800, then sunrise. Probably if I would measure outdoor with a light meter or with a spectrophotometer, then probably I would measure at around 5,000-6,000 Kelvin. And then if we have a cloudy sky or even a very sunny bluish sky, then the color temperature rises up to 7,500. So with some of your laptops, if you calibrate your laptop, then perhaps the wizard is asking you what kind of color temperature you want to use. And then you can enter either 4,000 Kelvin or 3,000 Kelvin, a kind of a warmish light, or up to 7,000-8,000 Kelvin. And then you get a kind of a more bluish white appearance. So this illustration to the right shows the relative spectral energy distribution of black body radiators with color temperature of 2,800, as a typical incandescent lamp, a kind of a very bluish light. So again, color temperature and spectral power distribution is a kind of related. So we see that there is a very low number, a lot of energy in the reddish part. A high number means that there is a lot of energy in the blue part. And if we talk about 5,000 Kelvin, then we see that in terms of the energy, there is almost equal energy across the visible spectrum. That's just another illustration indicating kind of the warmish, warmer type of light and kind of more bluish light. What is important to take away? So in the color community, color science, people talk a lot about either 5,000 Kelvin and what is called D50 or D65. So this is a very common expression. So now the question is D50 equal to 5,000 Kelvin? And the answer is, what is D50 indicating? Also, D stands for daylight. And then you have the number 50 indicating 5,000 Kelvin. As I said, there is a kind of a relationship between spectral power distribution and color temperature. But this is not always the truth. So if we talk about D50, if you hear the expression D50, then that indicates that you have a color temperature which has a spectral power distribution which is almost equal across the visible spectrum. So if that is 380 kind of blue, that is then red. So typically D50, that tells me, okay, I have 5,000 Kelvin of a light source which has equal energy in the blue, green, and in the red. If we talk about 5,000 Kelvin, then it can be a light source, which perhaps might look like that. So totally, this white profile is also indicating 5,000 Kelvin. But it doesn't have an equal energy distribution. Do you see the difference between the white profile and the yellow profile? So that is the difference. So if people talk about D50, then we know it has equal energy across the visible spectrum. And if we talk about 5,000, then it can have these type of profile. That is the main difference. This is also a kind of a table with different color temperatures. So in the lab, you will notice a typical viewing booth, also a box with different type of illumination where we can switch between typically 5,000 Kelvin type of glödelampe, incandescent lamp, or what is called a cold white fluorescent lamp, kind of a storage room illumination. So with that, you can switch between different lighting to kind of get an idea of the color appearance, how color appearance look like, either from prints or from textile. Yes. Correlated color temperature, we skipped that. Let's move on to couple of slides about color rendering index. So schematically, here you see a light source that emits light with the same energy across the visible spectrum. So that means an object or surface can be illuminated with the same energy in the same way. And the colors of the three balloons appear very saturated. But then what about if we would have these type of white light? So if we have energy only in the kind of bluish part, and then we have energy, schematically speaking, we have only in the yellow part. So how would these three balloons look like? Yeah, so there is no energy in the red, so that means there is no red balloon. There is no energy in the green either, so there is no green balloon either. So there is only energy in the yellow, which means we might appear a kind of a yellowish balloon, schematically speaking. But this can be related to what is called the color rendering index. which is a quantitative measure of the ability of light source to reproduce colors of various objects faithfully in comparison with idle or natural light source. So light sources with a high color rendering index are desirable, as I said, in typically color critical application, such as photography or cinema, food industry. Food industry is very much dependent of good lighting. Otherwise, you won't buy the meat in the freezers. Museum lighting, obviously, is very important to see all the details of a painting. So color rendering index of traditional incandescent and fluorescent lamps is quite poor because they tend to privilege the red and the blue-green part of the visual spectrum. So, again, if we have three different scenarios, so this is a kind of a typically daylight, which we would have if we would measure the spectral power distribution right now outdoors. And this is a typical fluorescent lamp, also a tube. And then this is a kind of a very poor light, typically street light of a high-pressure sodium lamp. And then if you have a look at these 14 kind of reference colors, so these are predefined reference colors, then a natural daylight would be able to reproduce all these 14 reference colors in a rather precise way. And therefore, it provides a color rendering index equal to 200. So in the color rendering index, RI, 100 is the highest value, which then communicates with rendering quality. Then, of course, if you have a look at the typical tubes, light tubes, fluorescent tubes, so some of the colors are not that exact reproduced. So we can have a look on these 14. So this type of shade is equal to 100 color rendering index. So all these colors are reproduced on top level. But then on the tube, we can see some colors. This reddish color, it still provides 98, which is a kind of a rather high rendering index. But then there are some other colors, like this green 51, 89. The red is very poor. It only has 7. So then if we average all the color rendering index of these 14 reference colors, we end up with only 83, which is lower than 100. And if you look at this high-pressure sodium lamp, then the rendering index is rather poor. And again, I showed you this image previously. So if I have my color checker on the daylight, then it's quite obvious that I'm able to reproduce all these colors faithfully, which then indicates that daylight has the highest color rendering index, whereas then this high-pressure sodium lamp is a kind of rather poor. So therefore, it will produce only a color rendering index of 20-24. Yeah, and that is just a kind of an image indicating how important it is typically for food or fruits. So it does not look as tempting eating these fruits compared to this image where you have much more vivid colors. Then the relationship between color temperature and color rendering index. So all these four apples are reproduced with the same color rendering, with the same color temperature, 2700. But the color rendering index is different. So this is 100, and then it goes all the way down to 270. Just to indicate the relationship between color temperature. Color temperature can be low. It doesn't mean that the color rendering index is poor. So just a couple of words. How is this rendering index calculated? You need to have a reference. You have a reference, and then you have a test light, and you wanna measure the test light versus the reference. And then with the reference, you have in that RA color rendering index, you have these 14 reference colors. With under the reference lighting is equal then to 100. And then you compare this certain test illuminant, whether or how good they are able to reproduce these 14 reference patches. And then you end up with this certain number indicating the color rendering index. So the current color rendering index, this RA, has been established in the 60s. So now we are 2023, so 60 years ago. 6 years ago, there was no LED illumination in the 60s. Of course, incandescent lamp, but then some of the tubes, they has been established. So this current standard is a kind of behind the new technology, but still it is used. And there are multiple critical points to that. So first of all, it is the number of test patches. So we are talking about with the current array, only 14 test patches. And these 14 test patches are not representative for very high saturated colors or skin tones. So therefore, there are a number of new color rendering index systems has been established, such as this color quality scale, color rendering index 2012, and then this TM 3015, which is a kind of a private color rendering index method. But what all these methods have in common, so they use a kind of a different statistical analysis. So instead of using just the average, they use root mean square errors, means that higher outliers are weighted different than small errors, which then gives a much better indication about the color quality. And then, of course, the number of reference colors has been increased dramatically. So all these three, there we talk about 100 or up to 1,000 reference colors representing skin tones, memory colors, also grass and grass green and blue sky, and highly saturated colors. Yes, I won't go into the details of these three more advanced because still, they have not been implemented yet on a large scale. But I want to spend now the last 5 minutes to talk about metamerism. Are there any students who have been exposed to metamerism or know what metamery is all about? Probably all of you have been exposed, but you have probably not noticed it. So the term metamerism is derived from Greek and refers to equality under certain circumstances. Also equality being the same under certain circumstances. So if the color of two different objects appear to be the same under daylight, but they appear to be different under indoors room lighting, then the phenomenon is called metamery. So it's not the same blue, isn't it? But if these two would be kind of closer, then the point with metamery is that under this illumination in here, we will get a visual match. But if I go outdoor under a different illuminating, then I would get a mismatch between these blue. Because this is a kind of textile produced bluish, and this is a kind of plastic coated on cardboard. So the reflectance properties of this is not equal to this. So we may have two different reflectance properties, but under a certain illumination, they may appear identical. But under a different illumination, the match fails. So now if I say you have experienced that, then I would like to show this sample here. So you might have a dress coat made from cotton or nylon, and then you want to have a similar, or you want to have the same type of trousers. But the trousers are not made by cotton. It's perhaps made by nylon. And in the shop, under the shop illumination, it is an absolute visual match. Then you leave the shop, daylight, and then you might realize, oh, the heck, there's no match anymore between the jacket and the trousers. So I'm pretty sure, especially the females have experienced that in one or another circumstances. And this is what metamerism is about. And of course, if we talk about critical color reproduction, then the illumination is very important. So for instance, for a graphic designer who is communicating color with a customer, then it's a kind of very important that the customer and the graphic designer, at least in the designing production process, that everybody is using the same illumination. We do not have control how the end user is looking at the textile sample at home. There is no control about that. But at least we should have control in the production phase from a designer's point of view to the customer and to a printer or a textile producer. And that is also standardized, and we talk about 5,000 Kelvin. Only if you have this kind of standard, then it makes sense to talk about color. So if the customer is using candlelight and the designer has this type of lighting, there's no point talking about gray balance or talk about saturated colors. So that is a kind of very, very important. And of course, so first of all, the explanation, why does this kind of why does this phenomenon appear? Yes. So if we again have a look very quickly at this multiplication of the illumination, the reflectance, and the cone sensitivities and the cone absorption. So this is only cones red, green and blue. So we are ending up with three numbers. So if we're multiplying this illumination times the reflectance, times this model, we end up with three numbers only. And now we know that we can slightly change the illumination, also the spectral power distribution can be slightly different, then the reflectance could be slightly different. And still, if we multiply, we might end up with exactly the same three numbers. So the likelihood, if we have only three numbers, because we have only three cones, then the likelihood is quite high to end up with the same number when we change the input in the reflectance and in the illumination. So if we would have 10 or 15 or 20 different cones, then the likelihood to end up with 20 different numbers would be much smaller. So due to the fact that we have only three cones, metamery occurs. But the positive thing is with metamery, if we wouldn't have had metamerism, then it wouldn't be possible to reproduce yellow made with green light and red light. So due to metamery, it is possible to reproduce any kind of additive color made by red, green, and blue. Or to make green mixing with watercolor, light blue, cyan, and yellow, and we end up with green. Does that make sense? Okay. I think that's the... Yeah, I have some samples, so there is no time now to show these kind of test samples. But I take these test samples down to the lab. So then we can check metamery down in the lab on the different illumination. Okay, good. Next week, there is the lecture takes place in here on Tuesday, because Wednesday you have a design day, I think. Okay, so we change from Wednesday to Tuesday, 10:15. Okay, have a good week.